Chapter 8. Zavala lay on his side, his right arm pinned under his hip bone, his left curled up to his chest. His legs were immobilized by a soft weight. Ignoring the jagged shards of pain stabbing under his ear, he lifted his head and saw Kane stretched belly down across his knees. In the dim, battery-powered light, Zavala saw that the cabin was littered with papers, ditty bags, clothing, bottles of water, seat cushions, and other loose items. Zavala reached for his headset and held it to his ear. Silence. He tested Kane's headset. Not even a hint of static. The loss of communication was ominous, but Zavala's optimistic nature would not let him dwell on such bad luck. He wiggled one leg, freed his foot, and used it to shove Kane's body off the other leg. Kane rolled onto his back, and a low groan escaped his lips. The painful exertion triggered waves of nausea in Zavala. He unclipped the first aid kit from the wall and broke open an ampule, waving it under his nostrils. The acrid odor snapped him to alertness. He removed the good luck cap. Gingerly probing his scalp with his fingertips, he found a lump that felt as big as an egg. He poured water from a canteen on a compressed bandage and held it lightly against his head. Even the slight pressure was painful, but the throbbing eased. Zavala tucked a seat cushion under Kane's head. He removed Kane's skull cap and applied the compress. Kane winced, and his eyes blinked wide open. "Ow!" he said. A good sign. Zavala lightened the pressure but kept the compress in place.
"Sorry, Doc. Florence Nightingale couldn't make it, so you're stuck with me," Zavala said. "Try moving your toes and fingers."
Kane flexed his hand and foot joints, then bent his legs at the knees, grimacing in pain.
"Nothing seems broken."
Zavala helped Kane sit up and handed him the canteen. He waited until Kane had slugged down a couple of gulps, then said,
"What do you remember, Doc?"
Kane pursed his lips in thought.
"I was looking out the window,
broadcasting my observations." He glanced at his headset.
"Don't bother," Zavala said. "The headsets don't work."
Kane's face turned the color of oatmeal.
"We're not connected to the surface?"
"Temporarily. Keep talking." Kane took a deep breath.
"We saw some kind of weird big fish or whale. Next, I remember heading for the moon. Then Blotto. What about you?"
Zavala jerked a thumb upward.
"Same scenario. I went airborne and slammed against the roof. I put my hand out to soften the blow, but all I got for the effort was a sore arm. Good thing I've got a hard head.
From the sounds of it, the cable probably slipped on the winch drum." Zavala said nothing.
"I don't get it," Kane said. "Why haven't they winched us up by now?"
He noticed that the bathysphere was perfectly still, and he seemed to catch his breath.
"We're not moving, Joe.
What's happened to us?" Zavala wanted to avoid panic, but there was no sugarcoating their situation.
"We seem to be sitting on the bottom, Doc."
Kane looked at the instrument panel and saw that the systems were operating on batteries.
"If we were still attached, we'd have power."
"Oh, hell! The cable must have snapped."
"That's almost impossible. And there could be other reasons for the breakdown. We're talking about maintaining contact over a cable through more than a half mile of ocean. Remember Beebe comparing the bathysphere to a pea on a cobweb? No man-made system is flawless, but this isn't the Titanic. Even if we were no longer connected to the surface, we've got other options."
Kane brightened.
"Duh, of course. Your flotation system."
Zavala managed to smile.
"What do you say we pop up to the BB lounge and mix a pitcher of margaritas?"
"What are we waiting for?" Kane was as ebullient as a condemned man given an 11th-hour reprieve. Zavala unclipped a nylon bag from the wall and asked Kane to clean up the cabin. Busy work would lift Kane's spirits as well. "The compressed air tanks are in the center of the platform, and they feed into flotation bags that are stuffed into the skids," Zavala explained.
When the go switch is activated, doors open in the sides of the skids. Compressed air fills the bags instantly, and they lift us to the surface, where the ship can snag us.
Kane rubbed his palms together in anticipation. Margaritaville, here we come. Zavala slid over to the instrument panel.
Funny, isn't it? We go through all sorts of trouble to get to the bottom of the sea, and when we finally make it, we want to go home.
We can discuss the philosophical implications on the deck of the Beebe, Kane said. I'd be happy just to be able to stretch out my legs. Zavala turned his attention to a plastic box attached to the wall next to the instrument panel. He unsnapped the box's cover to reveal a red button emblazoned with an arrow pointing up.
This is a two-step process, he explained. This button arms the system, and that identical button on the control panel activates it. When I say go, you hit the switch, and I'll do the same with mine. Then hold on. There's a 10-second delay.
Kane put his finger to the button Zavala had indicated.
Ready. Go, Zavala said.
Zavala had tested the escape system in a water tank and prepared himself for a muted bang and a whoosh, but nothing happened at the end of 10 seconds. He told Kane to try again. Again, nothing happened. Zavala checked a troubleshooting display that would have indicated a system malfunction, but saw nothing amiss.
Why won't it work? Kane asked. Something must have gotten banged around when we hit bottom.
Don't worry. I programmed in a backup system. Zavala tapped a keypad to reroute the signal and told Kane to try again. Again, there was a failure to inflate. They would have to go with the manual switch. Zavala opened another plastic-covered panel and looped his fingers through a handle attached to a cable. Pulling the cable, he explained, would produce a small electrical current that would trigger the flotation mechanism. He clenched his teeth and yanked. Nothing happened. He tried several more times, but it was no use. The manual trigger failed to activate. Kane watched these fruitless attempts with growing apprehension.
What's wrong? He asked.
Zavala's hand dropped from the manual switch. He stared into space, letting his mind's eye travel through the workings of the flotation system. His gaze wandered to the window. He flicked the searchlight on and was puzzled when he didn't see a glimmer. He moved closer to the window. Sliding a flashlight from its wall rack, he pointed the light out the window, cupping his eyes to prevent reflection. The light failed to penetrate the darkness. He passed the flashlight to Kane.
Take a look.
Kane peered through the porthole.
Hell, there's black mud against the windows. We came down hard. There's nothing wrong with the system. The mud is blocking the flotation doors.
Kane was silent for a time. When he did speak, it was almost in a whisper.
We're screwed, aren't we?
Zavala reached out and gripped one of Kane's wrists tightly. Calm down, Doc, he said evenly. Their eyes locked for a second, and Kane said,
Sorry, Joe. Your call.
Zavala loosened his grip.
I don't mean to sound casual. We're in a tough spot, yes, but it's far from hopeless. The folks on the BB must know something has happened, and they've got our position.
What good will that do if the cable is broken? They still have to haul us up somehow.
I'm sure Kurt will figure it out.
Kane snorted. Austin's an impressive guy, but he's not a miracle man. Zavala thought about the countless times Austin's courage and resourcefulness had snatched them back from the edge of disaster.
I've worked with Kurt for years, and he's as close to a miracle worker as I've ever seen. If anyone can get us out of here, he can. We've got more than 3 hours of air and enough power to give us light and heat. Our biggest problems will be boredom and el baño.
He picked up a plastic bag.
This should take care of our sanitary needs. Since we've been thrown together by the fates, maybe we should know more about each other.
Tell me more about your work, Zavala said. Kane's face lit up, and he seemed to forget his claustrophobic surroundings.
My specialty is the phylum Cnidaria, which includes the class commonly known as jellyfish. Many people don't find jellyfish terribly exciting.
I think jellyfish are very exciting, Zavala said. I was zapped once by a Portuguese man of war. The encounter was extremely painful. The man of war is not considered a true jellyfish, but rather a colony of different organisms living in symbiosis. The tentacles are equipped with thousands of nematocysts, the venom apparatus, and grow as long as 65 feet. Size isn't everything, though. You're lucky you didn't encounter the little sea wasp. That critter's sting could have landed you in the morgue.
I didn't consider myself lucky at the time, Zavala said as he recalled the burning sting.
What's the focus of your research?
My lab has been looking into ocean biomedicine. We think the ocean will be the most important future source of pharmaceutical compounds.
Like the Amazon rainforest?
There's been a lot of interest in the Amazon, but we think the ocean will far surpass anything that's been found in the jungle.
You're talking jellyfish instead of jaguars.
There are more similarities than differences between the land and the sea.
Take curare, for instance. The Amazon Indians used it as a paralyzing poison on their arrow tips, but its muscle-relaxant properties make it useful as a medicine.
And you see similar potential for jellyfish?
That and more.
Jellyfish, squid, octopi, snails, seemingly simple creatures with complex systems for feeding and defense.
What sort of work were you doing in the Pacific Ocean? Zavala asked.
I was working on a project that could affect every man, woman, and child on this planet.
Now you've really got my attention. Tell me more.
Can't, Kane said. Top secret. I've already said too much. If I told you more, I'd have to kill you. He realized the absurdity of his threat, given their dire circumstances, and began to giggle uncontrollably. Zavala choked back his laughter.
Laughing uses up too much oxygen.
Kane became serious again. Do you really think Austin is going to come to our rescue?
He's never failed before.
Kane pretended he was zipping his mouth shut.
Then the nature of our work will have to remain classified in case there is a slim chance that we'll get out of this damned hollow steel ball.
Zavala laughed softly.
I guess your romance with Bibi's world is over.
Kane managed to eke out a smile.
Your turn, Joe. Tell me how you came to Numa.
Admiral Sandecker hired me right out of college. He needed a good mechanic. Zavala was being typically modest. The son of Mexican immigrants, he had graduated from New York Maritime College with a degree in marine engineering. He had a brilliant mechanical mind and expertise in every known kind of propulsion, able to repair, modify, or restore any engine, automobile, ship, aircraft, be it steam, diesel, or electric. Sandecker had heard reports about the bright young student and recruited him before he received his diploma. He was Numa's top submersible designer of manned and unmanned vehicles, and he was a skilled aircraft pilot as well.
You make it sound like Numa hired you to change tires in the agency's motor pool, Kane said.
He glanced around the interior of the bathysphere. We wouldn't be alive if it hadn't been for the modifications you installed in the B-3. Zavala shrugged. Despite his reassurances, he knew that their rescue was problematic. Using less air would only prolong the inevitable. He glanced at the display panel. Slightly more than 2 hours of air left. Sleepy from the effects of stale atmosphere, he closed his eyes and tried not to think about the air supply ebbing away.